Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, the Next Fan Up podcast.
He's a good player, and yes, you are still crazy.
Whoa, what?
I actually tune in late in the game to find out what betting line he has.
Whoa, what?
I'm starting to sense a theme here.
Yeah, I do wonder if maybe Dak Prescott can get a part-time job with CBS, because we all know that, after the first commentary game, Tony Romo's going to, get a swollen tongue or some laryngitis, and he's going to be out for the next 8 weeks.
Whoa, what?
Yep. Officially off the rails in less than 30 seconds. Here we go.
Whoa, what?
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the It's the Kids, Marty. It's the Kids edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader. You can hear the wind blustering in the background. The weather here in Connecticut is lousy. I don't know what the weather is like overseas, but that usually means I do have one of our overseas super fans on the podcast today. I'll bring him in just a moment. I'd want to tell you, though, we're going to be talking a little bit about Tony Romo. I've got that super fan here, too. We're going to be talking about wide receivers with Matt Harmon of NFL.com and the creator of the Reception Perception. And we will also be going back in time. I used the Back in Future reference a couple weeks ago when I promised we would redraft the 2013 draft. And today is the day we will actually be redrafting 2013. So we will go back and do that. Now, let me bring in our super fans today, and I'll start with the blustery overseas guy, our Washington Redskins superfan, Neil. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Jay, how you doing? I'm just looking at the list of names on this show today, James. Jay, it's a bit like a reunion of the regular season Thursday podcast, so I just wonder which one of you guys has brought the Hostess Snacks cupcakes.
Oh, yes. That's a great point, Neil. Once again, the relationship between Next Fan Up and Hostess Snacks continues to expand as our Raiders superfan Monty tweeted at them, "Do you guys make Skittle-flavored snacks yet?" In honor of the fact that Marshawn Lynch met with the Oakland Raiders this week. Hostess Snacks replied, "Now that's a sweet idea, Mont Sadius. Please remember that any idea you submit becomes our property, smiley face emoticon." So there you go. Hostess Snacks. Now, not only are we participating with you, but we're giving you great ideas like Skittle flavored snacks. Greg, you eat the banana vanilla flavored Hostess cupcakes and you're our Steelers super fan, which makes a lot of sense.
Well, it doesn't hurt. That's for sure. It's great to be back here on a Thursday. And I'm just happy we're out of the crazy Ian Rappaport phase of our offseason.
and a little inside baseball there. James is our Eagles super fan. Hello, James.
Hey guys, how's everyone doing?
See, James, I didn't have anything clever prepared for you. I didn't know where to go with you.
Well, it's a very quiet offseason right now for just about everybody, but my team in particular, you know, haven't done anything. We're literally just waiting around for the draft, and I think if any other big move happens, it'll probably be some trade for, you know, a certain quarterback in Seattle.
You have me ponderous. And speaking of quarterbacks, we go to our favorite prison zone. It is Prison Zone 6, where our Dallas Cowboys superfan Kevin is still recovering from his blog post on saying goodbye to Tony Romo.
Oh, yeah. It was a tough one to write. I actually wrote it at like 3 a.m. I had to revise it when I woke up to make sure there wasn't any grammatical errors. And there was a bunch before I sent it into to the website. But yeah, oh, God. It was a tearful write for sure.
Greg mentioned
the voice of men, we wrote it.
Greg mentions it was 2,500 words, which was just crazy to say goodbye to your beloved Tony.
Yeah, he deserves more, honestly. I just needed to go to sleep.
All right, we're going to talk about Tony Romo in just a second. Just so you know, you can go to www.nextfanup.wordpress.com to read Kevin's goodbye to Tony Romo. And we will start there, as Tony is 99% sure he's retired and taking over the number one analyst job at CBS. And I've got a lot of thoughts about where to go with this one, but I will start with the Tony Romo apologist, Kevin. Kevin, what are your thoughts here? Tony Romo now going to be broadcasting AFC games for CBS.
Before you go, Jay, does that mean the rest of us can go away for half an hour and come back?
No. No, I'll keep this one brief, Neil. Trust me. Or I'll try. But yeah, about the AFC games, I'm actually pretty sure, small tangent before I get into the stuff. So I'm pretty sure he's going to be, him and Jim Nantz are going to be announcing the Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game. So that's going to be a real treat. But I think Tony will be pretty successful at his new career. Passionate man, loves the game of football. I mean, that's all I can say about that right now, because I've never actually heard him commentate on a game, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, of course, and say he's going to be 100 times better than Phil Sims, because my dog would be better than Phil Sims. I mean, Phil Sims, I mean, it's a miracle he lasted this long. I don't want to offend him, but he's an absolute buffoon. Sometimes it appears that he doesn't even have a grasp of the English language, so I'm not even really sure how he got that job. I mean, I know how he got it. He won a Super Bowl somehow. But I just want to prove my point about Phil Sims' ineptitude as an announcer. I just have a few gem quotes from him, if you guys would love to hear them.
Let's go. Yes, please.
Okay, the first one I have is this. The Patriots have run this flea flicker for years. This was a different formation, though. Another one, during the Dolphins-Pittsburgh playoff game this year, at the end of the game, he said, "I can't blame Matt Moore. If it wasn't for that interception and two fumbles, he would have had a perfect game." And this is the real gem out of them all. It makes zero sense whatsoever. Shazier, he's not one of the fastest guys, but he's definitely one of the fastest. So I'm not really sure what Phil was trying to say there. Maybe CTE has gotten to Phil. But he is just often spewing incoherent nonsense, and it's a little sad he's gone, just because I loved making fun of him. But of course I will be happy to see Romo on a weekly basis every Sunday, even though he's not playing. So it's a good consolation prize, I guess.
I will back you up on the demise of Phil Sims, although I wonder how you go from the number one guy to the nobody guy in less than 24 hours. That doesn't normally happen. Usually just get demoted to the second team. But Phil Sims, this would usually be the way he would go into a highlight or a replay. All right, so here you see he's running out. Oh, look at that move! That was just tremendous. Thanks for the insight, Phil. Really appreciate that. That's pretty much the way that I enjoyed Phil Sims recapping. Greg, what are you saying over there?
Oh, I don't hate Phil Sims. He's not clearly biased, but he is a little bit clueless. He's not like a John Madden type, so you know.
No, but Madden would actually be like, "All right, so this year he's going to hit the A gap and boom!"
It was great.
Like Madden at least made it fun and included some actual information. Sims would be like, "All right, you can see he's running. He's not the fastest, but he's one of the fastest." What a move! That was Phil Sims doing a highlight.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I'm not saying he's John Madden. I like John Madden because he's who I grew up with. But at the same time, also, it's not like Phil Sims is Chris Collinsworth, where I just hate every word that comes out of his mouth. I kind of like nothing Phil Sims. So
This is awesome.
He's got a point there. He's not Collinsworth.
All right. So James, I threw this Twitter question out, and it was pretty funny because earlier yesterday in the morning hours, I tweeted out, "Hey kids, for Thursday, we want to know your favorite broadcast teams, especially as Tony Romo has the new gig with CBS." Literally zero response. Later that night, when I noticed we had zero response, I tweeted out, "So you guys hate all the NFL broadcast teams. Let us know your favorite guys." And then all of a sudden, I've got a few responses because people want to talk more about the ones that they hate than the ones that they love. So, James, go ahead. Have at it. What do you not like about Chris Collinsworth?
As previously mentioned, every word that comes out of his mouth. I'm not going to say it's all buffoonery, but it speaks to a certain level of ineptitude. Like, what research are you doing? And I understand that you can, me having a math degree, I can speak to this in full volumes. Yes, you can take numbers that are put up on the field and formulate them any way you want to make them tell whatever story you want that seems favorable or unfavorable about whatever player or team that you're analyzing. Unfortunately, Collinsworth does nothing to make anyone look particularly good unless it's an individual player who he's been slurping over since the day they were born. For the most part, he bashes everybody. And it's like, well, is anybody good? Or are you just saying that everyone just got lucky? He has a hard time recognizing true skill as a pair to the flow of the offense, individual talent. Their pro football focus rankings are all over the place pretty much all throughout the season. There's no consistency. A player will be, say, top five at the beginning of the season, plays pretty well at a Pro Bowl level, yet somehow at the end of the season they're in the 20s. It's like, how did this guy fall off so far, but yet he's still on the verge of making a Pro Bowl? The way they manipulate and play with numbers is not necessarily magical, but it's, and I've looked at some of these things, they're just not concise, and, you know, not where the average fan can look at it and be like, okay, I see what you did there. You'd really need like some type of advanced degree to understand how they manipulated these numbers to get the crazy information they got. If you're talking about favorite broadcast teams as of those who are currently broadcasting based on last season, yeah, I don't have a favorite one right now. I have bits and pieces of certain teams. I like the Monday night team when Tirico was still there. Of course, everyone loves Summerall and Madden if you're going all time. But as of right now, there is no combo of two or three people in a booth that I love all together.
It'd be funny to talk to the different generations of fans to see who their all time crew would be. And I would imagine Summerall Madden's going to be at the top of most people's lists. But let's get a true unbiased opinion and go across the pond to Neil. Neil, talk to me about the broadcast teams. And do you have English specific broadcast teams on games over there?
Sometimes, Jay, they tried that in the early days of the NFL over here, and it was absolutely hideous. We like to have that American accent to go along with the American game. That seems to tickle us a little bit more than having some English accent trying to commentate. But in terms of commentators over the years, I grew up with, and you guys might know it, the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, the AFRTS. That was broadcast across, I guess, in those days, to the large population of German military guy, or American military in Germany, and they used to have live games on the radio every Sunday night, and we used to pick that up here in the UK. That was tremendous commentary. That was usually Westwood One, and I have to say, of all the commentary teams, I would always take radio guys over television guys because they're far better in terms of describing the game. I don't like Aikman because he's Dallas and that Joe Buck guy. Oh, you wouldn't be tired of slapping him, would you? I quite like Phil Simms, but I have to be honest with Phil Simms. That's generally the AFC commentators, really, isn't it? They do a lot of AFC games, and I'm an NFC guy, and I don't really look at the second division.
I can tell you, I'm in agreement with pretty much everybody here. The number one teams on all of the networks are
are pathetically bad. And it's really surprising to me that especially Fox hasn't promoted Kenny Albert and Daryl Moose Johnston, because that is the best TV team right now by far. Moose has a way of explaining what's going on in a game with such detail and makes it so simple for the audience to sort of understand what it is that he's talking about, but still go in depth enough for the hardcore football fan to really enjoy the game and the commentary that he's adding. And Albert does a great job, and I don't know if he learned it from his dad or not, but he does a great job of letting Moose talk, giving him the reins to go on about what it is that he wants to sort of highlight and get out there. And maybe that's part of the director and the producer. I'll always give a high five to a producer in the truck that makes sure that that's what's going on in that particular instance. But yeah, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are absolutely horrible when it comes to calling a game. Buck should stick to baseball. And the fact that he does the World Series games and the playoff games and ends up leaving the NFL booth is already, you know, part of the problem, highlighting that particular instance. Do you have a favorite, Kevin?
I mean, to be honest, when I'm watching the Cowboys games, whoever is commentating, if the Cowboys are winning, I'm sort of loving what they're saying. And if not, I'm sort of cursing them every other play. I'm like, go bleep yourself, whoever that is. But honest, I don't really have a favorite team, but some of my favorites are Kevin Harlan and Rich Gannon, just because I love Kevin Harlan. I think he makes the game super exciting, so good for him. And then one of my other favorites is Ian Eagle and Dan Fouts. I mean, Fouts, I don't think is the best, but Ian Eagle, I absolutely love as well.
Oh my God. Ian Eagle, he's the one guy whenever he's on a Patriots game, I'm like, come on, because he's such a Jets homer, as that's where he got his start. He hates the Patriots, and it comes through in every game that he calls for them. I'm like, oh, I can't believe the Patriots have to play this lowly team so they get the third team on CBS. And just in case you don't realize this, the teams are in order of what they deem as importance. Nance and Romo is team number one. They'll have the biggest game every single week. Team number two is Greg Gumbel and Trent Green. Green's not that bad. The problem is he's a quarterback homer. And it's always pass interference or, oh, I can't believe he got that extra hit in on the quarterback. That's Trent Green's main issue. And that's honestly, as I'm going to stay with you for one more moment here, Kevin, that's what I'm worried about with Romo, because he's never done this before. So the fact that he went straight from the football field to the number one team is a little awkward, I think.
I mean, it is a little surprising that he went to the number one team. He's going to be thrown straight to the fire. But, I mean, let's be honest here. It's not rocket science. I mean, he's going to have – I mean, Jim Nance, I mean, I'm not actually a huge fan of Jim Nance. He's sort of an arrogant, smug, you know what. But – he's been in the business for a long time, so he's definitely the right person for Romo to get some tutelage from. So I think that will benefit Romo. And also, just side note, I think Romo also probably do some golf announcing with Jim Nance, just because Romo is an avid golfer. So that could also be part of the reason why they were on board with Romo. But yeah, I mean, he probably will have a little bit of a quarterback bias at first, but I think he will be objective and whatnot. I mean, since he's going to be doing AFC games, he's not really going to get Cowboys games, so that will certainly help him. Although I'm not even sure what he would say about the Cowboys. He's probably not on the best terms with them at the moment. So, I mean, I can just speculate all day about Romo and what he'll do in the booth, but The one concern I have about him, though, is whenever he does interviews or talks, most of the time he's sort of monotone. So he's definitely going to need to change that up. And I think that's like an easy fix. It won't be that hard to change for him. But as I said, anyone's better than Phil Simms, and certainly he will be. Although it will give Twitter and social media even more time to make fun of Romo, because you know, that's really what they do best. So looking forward to it.
Neil, Tony, in his press conference with CBS yesterday, said that he's 99% retired. So not 100%, only 99%. The thought is, you know, teams are going to come calling as soon as their starter goes down with an injury before the season begins. And we know it's going to happen. But at the same time, he did address the fact that the Texans came calling, as well as other teams. We know that the Broncos had some interest. What are your thoughts here with Romo's move to the booth?
Well, my question for you, Jay, and maybe for the other guys too, would be if he had been offered the number three team in the commentary rota and not the number one gig covering the main games, do you think he would have played? Do you think he would have gone to be in that third team?
Yeah, he'd only be 75. Yeah, he'd only be 75% retired if he was on the third team.
He will have tested, I suppose, and done all that kind of stuff, and he'll get plenty of help to make his presentation sound professional. But I don't know. I mean, we'll find out soon enough. I'm just very surprised. Have they dumped Simms entirely, or is poor old Phil going to get a gig somewhere?
I still haven't seen any word on Simms. Anybody?
He probably doesn't even
realize what's
going on
yet. And I find it funny that he got the number one spot in place of Simms, considering CBS is owned by Showtime and Showtime have the same parent company. And Simms is one of the main contributors on Inside the NFL on, what is it, Tuesday, Wednesday nights when they air. So, how that relationship is going to play itself out as we get closer to the NFL season will be interesting.
I'm pretty sure Phil's going to end up on Bleacher Report with his son, Chris.
You might be even worse than Phil.
He absolutely is worse. He's so bad.
Some of the social media comments on teams that they hate. John mentions Michaels and Collinsworth. Billy says, yeah, the top are basically Collinsworth and the Aikman-Buck combo. Buck's love for Troy is so intense, it's creepy. And the stuff he says is awful. Collinsworth is actually the sole reason I've stopped playing Madden with sound on since he took over. Josh mentions to Billy, video games have gotten a lot better with their commentary, but are still a long way off from perfecting it. I believe Charles Davis, and I don't remember the name of the other guy, he's a Fox guy, does the Madden games now. Billy adds, Collinsworth's voice is horrible, though, and even on TV, he talks way too much. The dude is the worst. Yeah, Neil.
Yeah, I do wonder if maybe Dak Prescott can get a part-time job with CBS, because we all know that after the first commentary game, Tony Romo's going to get a swollen tongue or some laryngitis, and he's going to be out for the next 8 weeks. So somebody's going to have to replace him.
Oh, that's well done. That's well done right there.
Nice.
Matt says, to be honest, I don't really care as long as it isn't Joe Buck. Mark says Summerall was the man. He would just say, Aikman! Touchdown! So there's Mark. And then Josh, who had replied earlier, adds, Michaels and Collinsworth are definitely the best right now. Aikman is good, but Buck tries to add in his own analysis all the time instead of just calling the game. When Kenny, Moose, and Goose were a team, they were good. And I agree. I enjoyed having Goose on the sideline, adding the little denouement, if you will. Josh says Chris Myers has improved immensely in the last few years. I don't know about that. And the new Monday Night Football announcer is absolutely awful. Oh, no, that's just wrong. Sean McDonough, although he was better as a Red Sox announcer, he says he misses Tirico Gruden. But Tirico is now the, I don't know, what is he, the Thursday night, Sunday night fill-in for Al Michaels? And I know a lot of you guys, I think, Greg, you said Al Michaels is the best.
Oh, yeah. I love I actually tune in late in the game to find out what betting line he has, because he's cheering for it.
Oh, my. Well, there you go. There's Tony Romo. There's broadcast booths. All right. I'm going to take it to the field now and bring in our special guest. It's my pleasure to bring in our special guest this week. He is a writer at NFL.com and the creator of the Reception Perception, and that is definitely something I want to get a lot more information about. Here is Matt Harmon. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Jay. It's good to be talking to you this morning. You know, when we spoke on the phone about a week ago about some of the podcasts I've been doing, I told you it was cool to be, you know, coming full circle, as I used to listen to your podcast way back in the day that you produced, back to Football Today podcast. So it's very cool for me to be talking to you today. I'm excited to chat.
Well, I mean, beyond the Reception Perception, you know, some other things that I noticed by following you on Twitter is that you recently had a major life change and you've got a much smaller figure. So congratulations to you.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's a big part of my story that I think is worth sharing with people, because it's not, you know, it wasn't an easy journey for me. I know it's not an easy journey for many people. So whatever I can do with the little platform that the universe has granted me with this football madness, I feel I should give something back. And if I can share some parts of my story that helps other people, that's the goal.
Yeah, I about 4 years ago had lost a whole bunch of weight. I had regained it all, and now I'm back on the path of finding a way to lose it again. And this time, hopefully, not finding where I hit it the first time around.
Well, there you go, man. Let me tell you, it's a constant journey. So just you know, from me to you, keep after it, man. We're all still after it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I mean, I could probably go there with a couple of different running backs. You know, Leonard Fournette, you know, lost a bunch of weight from the combine to his pro day. And Eddie Lacy is famously apparently changing to playing offensive guard, although I don't think that's been officially announced yet. But I want to talk a little bit more about the Reception Perception. And what is that exactly? How would you best define that?
Yeah, so Reception Perception is a methodology that I came up with to evaluate the wide receiver position. You know, because I don't know if you or your listeners would agree with me, but you know, back when I was starting out as a writer, I always felt that like the receiver position was just so anecdotally analyzed. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you're watching a game on Sunday, you're kind of at the mercy of the announcers or the commentators. Because you don't get to see the full picture. So you hear a lot of like, well, there's just nobody open down the field, or this guy's always open, but the quarterback never hits him. I wanted to go in and actually quantify that, like take the qualitative realities of what happens on film with wide receivers and turn it into a quantifiable formula that you can judge other receivers against one another. And so what I did was I came up with Reception Perception. What I do is I go in over an 8-game sample for NFL players or a 6-game sample for college prospects, because that's where I've seen the data normalize for a full season. I chart every single route that they run, how often they run each particular branch of the route tree, how often they get open on those routes, what type of coverage, man, press, zone they're most successful in. And then there's also some ancillary metrics like breaking tackles after the catch or winning contested catches. So really, anything you want to know about a wide receiver, Reception Perception is going to tell you it.
I've been reading over a couple of the articles that I've seen you post, and a lot of them focusing on the well, especially this year, the 2017 draft class. Who's a guy that fans should probably be paying attention to right now that hasn't necessarily gotten a lot of the spotlight at the present time?
So I think one player that I actually pinpoint who started to get much more spotlight, and I think deservedly so, one guy I pinpointed as the most underrated prospect before he went out and dominated at the NFL Scouting Combine was Penn State's Chris Godwin. So Godwin is a younger guy. He was pretty productive at Penn State, but he went out his final game as a Nittany Lion. He went out and dominated the Rose Bowl against USC. I mean, that was the best game that I charted of any prospect all draft season. And so the curious thing when watching him was like, well, why is he rated as like a fourth round pick by some of these other major draft sites? I can't really come up with a good answer. I think sometimes it just takes draft analysts to maybe catch up, especially when it's like I'm doing a lot of this charting for draft prospects towards the end of the NFL season, like some of the playoffs or whatever. And, you know, so again, some people are still catching up on some of the underclassmen at that point. But Godwin's tape is fantastic. talked about the contested catch conversion rate in reception perception. His is 85.7% success rate. That is the highest score I have over the last two draft classes, narrowly beating out guys like Josh Doctson and Mike Williams, who were known as dominant in that part of the game. But then you look at his separation scores, 73.5% success rate against man coverage, and that is in above the 80th percentile among prospects that I've charted over the last 2 years. Also above average against press and zone. I think this guy can do it all. You see him make the highlight reel catches, but when you really go back and look at all of his routes, he's somebody that separates at all levels of the field. I had a pretty good source tell me that some teams have round one grades on him, and don't be surprised if he goes kind of into that early day two range in the NFL draft.
I have to take a look at where our super fans are, as we're currently doing the super fan super mock draft behind the scenes, and that podcast will be coming out next week to detail the first round that the super fans are making their draft choices. But I gotta imagine, I know that there's a big run of wide receivers in the first round, and I don't know if Godwin's among those wide receivers. So maybe it's maybe now that they're hearing this, they're gonna be all run into their draft boards and trying to change their pick.
Well, let me tell you, I think one team that is interesting there towards the end of the first round that I know has some interest in Godwin is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you know, they had him in for a private workout at their facility, which is obviously pretty close to where he is at Penn State. He's someone that would be – I don't know if he really does end up going in the first round. Like I said, maybe early second is kind of the best spot for him. But I know the Steelers want to pick an offensive skill position player, whether it's a tight end or a wide receiver, early in the NFL draft. And, you know, it wouldn't be – you know, we always get one of those surprise picks, and maybe Godwin is that surprise pick for the Steelers in the first round. You know, who knows?
Oh, my gosh. I don't think the Steelers need another wide receiver.
It just depends on how much you want to trust Martavis Bryant, you know.
That's also true.
That is a big question mark. Although I'm rooting for Bryant. Well, he's one of my favorites.
How does reception perception, do you use that with pro players as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. So I've been charting pro players longer than I have college players. I started charting pro guys, been on a preliminary basis, you know, testing the theory out back in the 2013 to 2014 off season, and then ever since then, when that rookie class came and hit, that was when the theories kind of took off. So I have data going back the last 3 years on NFL players.
Nice. Who has been the best receiver according to your statistics? Because I'd be curious to see if the perception, pardon the use of the word, is the same as the actual stats say.
Yeah. So some guys that have always been great, obviously when I'm tracking separation, you think of players like Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham, and they are certainly two of the best in reception perception over the long haul, especially Beckham. You know, it's crazy. Like when we saw him go out in that rookie year and have this dominant season, it was the thought process was like, oh, well, you know, he just caught fire. Like maybe this isn't something we're going to see again. He had an 80% success rate versus man coverage, which is still the highest success rate I have in the charting process. Which just goes to show you what kind of a special player he was. So he's always been a strong contender, obviously. But even those two smaller guys, and it's funny, I just actually logged T.Y. Hilton's data from 2016, obviously when he went out and led the NFL in receiving yards. He is much like one of those Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham types that not only is he getting a lot of separation, obviously as a good route runner with a lot of speed and quickness, but he has one of the higher – those along with those two smaller guys, he has some of the higher contested catch conversion rates out there. And I guess that's why those guys, I think, are able to, you know, maximize their smaller frames. So those are three guys that have always been high-end prospects in reception perception. But, you know, some guys that maybe, you know, would be a little more surprising. Allen Robinson was a guy that I pegged as a breakout player before his 2015 season. He's always scored at the NFL star level. Type of prospect. And another guy who just recently joined some of the more elite tier of scores that I have is Michael Thomas from the New Orleans Saints. Mm-hmm. You know, he's another one who went out and caught 92 passes as a rookie. And, you know, I think especially in fantasy analysis, like there's always thought of like, well, regression's going to hit or can't do this again, yada, yada. Thomas is a guy with special scores across the board. Really the best metrics that I have on a rookie wide receiver since Odell Beckham's 2014 season. So he's another one to look out for as kind of a longtime reception perception star.
I mean, we know that there's a lot of reasons behind the trade of Brandon Cooks to the New England Patriots, but I would imagine Michael Thomas's breakout is sort of one of the reasons behind the Saints being willing to allow Brandon Cooks to leave their franchise.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we talk about reception perception and Brandon Cooks. I have always gotten a lot, especially in like the dynasty fantasy football community, people love Brandon Cooks, you know, because he's young, he puts up a lot. At the end of the season, he puts up a lot of points. I think people often forget the journey that it took to get to that destination is never an easy path, you know. So it's always an up and down thing with him. Reception perception's always kind of been lower on him than the consensus, mainly because you look at his success rate versus press coverage. He's not somebody that has ever scored above the NFL average when getting pressed at the line of scrimmage. You know, he's a really good player. A vertical threat, a guy that can make plays in space, but he's not a traditional number one receiver. And I think you saw that come to a head this year when Michael Thomas gets drafted in the second round and pretty much immediately usurps that number one receiver role. You know, led the team in targets despite playing only 15 games, was the clear red zone guy. So I think they know they have a really special talent there in Michael Thomas. But also don't discount the fact that they have a guy like Willie Snead, who has always been somebody that is, you know, we're not like talking some of the best scores, but he's always been a guy that's shown really well in reception perception. You know, kind of came out of nowhere as an undrafted rookie in that 2014 class, but technically was a rookie in 2015 because he never actually saw any game time in 2014. Bounced around players like the Panthers and the Browns practice squads, and boy, those teams sure could use a receiver like him now. He's always somebody that's. It's shown really well, and I think they're confident in Willie Snead's ability to, you know, be sort of that mostly slot player, but play a little bit outside and catch a lot of passes in their system. He's somebody that reception perception has always had a strong opinion of.
And when we spoke a couple weeks ago, I told you straight out I wasn't a big fan of the move for the Patriots. I don't think Brandon Cooks necessarily fits well with what the Patriots try and do on offense. And you said that you might had some thoughts on that as well, based on your research.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I don't think Brandon Cooks is like a number one receiver in the true sense of the word. He's always, like I said, always come in under the NFL average, whether it's contested catch conversion rate, success rate versus man coverage or press coverage. He does have high success rates against zone coverage over the last two seasons, which I think is a positive for how New England would likely try to use him. I think they envision him, you know, and this is just me theorizing, I think they envision him as a long-term kind of replacement for Julian Edelman as the lead slot receiver. And Cooks did experiment with some slot receiver play, especially last season. So, you know, I like the trade simply because, look, you're picking 32nd overall in the NFL draft. Are you really going to get a player that is, if you want to bolster your offense's big playing ability, I don't think you're going to necessarily just grab a player that is more proven as a big play threat than Brandon Cooks. So I get the trade from that perspective. I also kind of see your side of it too, where he's definitely not really a fit with what, or he at least his best skill is not really a fit with what they want to do. And that's being a vertical threat. I mean, throughout the course of his reception perception statistics, even when he's not necessarily beating man coverage on a route-to-route basis, where he consistently gets open, are on the deep routes, the vertical nine route, the post route, the corner routes. Those, he always has strong separation scores. So I think they envision him more use on like the short routes, being able to get in space and kind of manufacture big plays that way. So it will be a fascinating kind of marriage to see play out, but I guess I see kind of both sides of it. But to me, I like the idea of, even if I've never been all that high on Cooks as a traditional starting receiver, I think the idea of just getting a playmaker and sending your first round pick for it, that it's fine with me, I suppose.
You know, and it's funny, you mentioned a replacement for Julian Edelman. He's sneakily old. As a player, yeah. He's 30 years old and he's already had 8 seasons in the NFL, which just sort of sneaks up on you, because I remember going to that training camp and watching the kid going, oh, wow, here's that Julian Edelman kid that everyone's talking about, the quarterback from Kent State. Yeah. Now they're going to play.
You know what, if you think about the slot receiver position too, like those guys, when it goes, it tends to go quickly. I mean, think about former Patriot Wes Welker. Like, he moved on, had one pretty decent year with the Broncos, but then, I mean, obviously concussions derailed his career too. But like, that's what happens with those guys, because, you know, players like Odell Beckham or Antonio Brown or Randy Moss back in his prime, like, you know, they're running sideline routes, they're going up against cornerbacks and safeties, but, you know, slot receivers are taking punishment in the middle of the field. Like, there's a consequence to all of those great first downs that you see them make and those big clutch plays over the middle. They tend to get hit by bigger people, and they themselves are smaller individuals. So I think it should be no surprise when it tends to go quickly for those guys. So maybe the Patriots are, again, playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers, you know, a few moves ahead on the Julian Edelman front, and again, already looking for his potential replacement. But the communication that he and Brady has is something that, you know, is hard to quantify via a charting methodology like reception perception, but it's absolutely something undeniable. And it'll be funny to watch, like, whether he is, whether Cooks can step into that role right away.
Yeah. Edelman is Brady's guy. We learned that watching many, many NFL films recaps of the Patriots season. One more thing before I let you go. We spent a big portion of the beginning of this podcast talking about Tony Romo's retirement. And I guess I still will kind of use retirement in quotes for the present time. That seems to hurt the Texans the most. I'm of the belief that the Texans probably feel okay going into the season with just Tom Savage as their starting quarterback. I personally, as a fan, if I were a fan of the Texans, and I'm sure our super fan would agree, doesn't feel all that comfortable with Tom Savage as the quarterback of their team. What is it that DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller and their skill sets, what can they do to help out a Tom Savage? Or maybe Jay Cutler is the better answer there.
Yeah, the Texans are in a tough situation right now. And, you know, to be blunt about it, I don't think we can really, whatever they choose to do with the quarterback position, we should not assume that that is the correct decision, because they've really bungled that position since Bill O'Brien is there. I mean, even, you know, Rick Smith made the trade for Matt Schaub, I believe. But, like, other than that, they have not made any kind of, like, correct decisions at the quarterback. Even Brian Hoyer, when he was playing solid, like, we have to remember Bill O'Brien yanked him after, like, three quarters in the beginning of 2015. When you look at DeAndre Hopkins especially, like, he's a really, really good player. I mean, you know, he's gotten the most out of what is – at least athletically, in terms of what he did at the NFL scouting combine, is a really limited sort of physical ability. You look at his reception perception, obviously above average against man and press coverage, pretty solid numbers after the catch, solid numbers in the contested catch conversion rate. The biggest question for me with Hopkins is, I think that the beginning part of his, at least I'm coming around to thinking this, that the beginning of his 2015, when he put out, you know, outrageous numbers, was in fantasy, like, one of the top two wide receivers in the first half of the season, was really a product of obviously his talent, but also a lot of just opportunity went his way in terms of the Texans were down all the time. They were in negative game script where he was just getting pummeled with like 12 targets at a minimum. We saw him even get 22 against the Falcons in one of those games. You know, I don't know that Hopkins is necessarily going to ever replicate that stretch. I do wonder if that, like, unfairly set the expectations for the type of player he is. Because you look at, you know, he had pretty much as bad a quarterback play as you could get last year. Then you saw his numbers just completely fall off. I think Hopkins is a really, really good player. I just think the Texans need to settle that quarterback position. They need to find somebody that he can grow with, especially because, you know, he did, for all of Brian Hoyer's flaws, and he's got plenty, the one thing he has always been able to do is just trust his number one target. Like, find the guy that he likes and just throw it up to that guy regardless of the coverage. You saw him do that with a player like when Cameron Meredith essentially became his guy when he was starting with the Bears last year. So I think the thing about Hoyer is he's not great, but he developed that sort of rapport with Hopkins. And I think that's the big thing for the Texans going forward is whoever that quarterback is, whether they have to go in with Tom Savage, they need to develop that relationship, because it was clear if there's one thing that Brock Osweiler didn't want to do, it was throw outside the numbers and deep. And that's pretty much the core of Hopkins' game. So bad marriage all around. Hopefully they can settle that position. But I do think Hopkins can, if they develop that sort of chemistry, I think that he can be an asset for whoever the young quarterback is that takes over that spot.
All right, Matt, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And for all my reception analysis this offseason, you can either use the hashtag on Twitter or go to receptionperception.com all the rookie write-ups that I've done this year, and also a link to how you can get the access to the NFL data this offseason as well.
Awesome, Matt. Thanks so much for joining me on the show. Appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you again on this podcast at some point down the road.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
There goes Matt Harmon. Clearly, he didn't want to sit around to fire up the Next Fan Up time machine. Here we go. Going back to April of 2013, when Bruno Mars was singing about being your man and Macklemore was heading to the thrift shop. Demi Lovato was having a heart attack. All the pop stars of April 2013. And here we go. Sitting with the number one draft choice is the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, back in the day, the Chiefs took Eric Fisher in the number one spot. But I don't think Eric Fisher would be the number one draft choice if they knew what we know now. And so the question I have for you, Greg, is are the Kansas City Chiefs taking your running back, Le'Veon Bell, number one overall?
They probably should be, but I'm going to stick with a Chiefs player here. I'm going to say Travis Kelce, since that was one of their picks. Mm-hmm. And he has as many all pros as Le'Veon Bell. So for synergy purposes, I'm going to say Travis Kelce, number one for the Chiefs, because they still had a younger Jamal Charles at that point.
Who just went?
Tight end. Yeah, me. You can't take a tight end number one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just did, guys. Come on.
It's got to be David Bakhtiari, surely. It took an offensive tackle there. Take the best tackle, take Bakhtiari.
Well, I will say, Neil, in your defense, as I'm looking at an article from 2013 stating what the Kansas City Chiefs' top needs are, offensive line is one of them, which is why Eric Fisher ended up being their number one draft choice. But I think you're right. I think if we're going to look at what their actual top need was back then, the top lineman out of this draft was, according to Pro Football Reference and their weighted career approximate value, it would be David Bakhtiari.
Yeah, I know it's a very rare thing, and you guys are probably in shock, but I have prepared for this.
Nice. Well, good. So while you've since you have some preparation, why don't you tell me what's going to happen next at pick number two with the Jacksonville Jaguars? They clearly should be going Le'Veon Bell.
Yes, absolutely. And when I say I prepared for this, I prepared the number one pick.
Well, that's...
No, seriously. Yeah. Seriously, no. I would certainly take Le'Veon Bell number two there, yeah. Even though I'm not keen on running backs so early, he's turned out to be, what is he? And he's certainly the top three running backs in the league. Versatile player, does all the things you want. So, oh, absolutely, yeah. Good pick.
The problem is I don't remember what Jacksonville's running back situation was in 2013.
They had
MJD.
Yeah, but he was really old at that point. So,
yeah. John Drew was pretty much falling apart.
So, I mean, Le'Veon Bell would have definitely been the pick there. All right, next up is the Miami Dolphins. And the Miami Dolphins, as I'm looking at weighted, again, I'm using Pro Football Reference, weighted career approximate value, would have a choice between your center, Kevin, and Travis Frederick, or running back Eddie Lacy, or guard Kyle Long. Where do you think the Miami Dolphins should go here?
I don't think they would have went center because they had one of the Pouncey bros who is still good, and I just he's often injured. But back in 2013, I don't think the Dolphins realized how injury-prone he really was. To be honest with you, I don't really think that since the Dolphins did go Deion Jordan, I'm going to go in a different direction. But of the three players you listed, I would definitely take Kyle Long. But how about Sheldon Richardson? Because he's a pass rusher. He's a defensive lineman. They obviously needed him. Granted, he's a little mentally unstable, but he is a very talented player. So I think that that honestly would have been a decent fit for the Dolphins at three. I know he's a D-tackle, and D-tackles don't usually go that high, but why not? Why not Richardson?
Greg, go ahead and tell him why it wouldn't be Richardson if they're going pass rusher.
Well, there's already a top five pass rusher that has kind of worked out for the Lions. That Azika Alsa, right? Or however you say his name.
Anta.
But I mean, he's made a Pro Bowl. He's a threat for the Lions. So I would think that that would be exactly what the Dolphins needed.
I will tell you, according to this article, one of their top needs was running back. I'm not going to be cruel and give them Eddie Lacy, even though he does rank high in terms of weighted career average, based on whatever stats Pro Football Reference is using for Eddie Lacy. But I mean, the plus is that Eddie Lacy can now convert to guard for the Miami Dolphins if they did take him at running back. Right? Right? No? All right.
Brutal.
Next up, James, is your Philadelphia Eagles. So who better to make the pick for the Philadelphia Eagles in 2013 than you? Now, Lane Johnson ended up being your actual pick. Is that the way you want to go? Is that the way you want to stay? Or do you want to go somewhere else? By the way, we're giving the Miami Dolphins. We're taking Ansa off the board and giving Ansa to the Dolphins.
Oh, clearly. Yeah, we're sticking with Lane Johnson. The pick has turned out well, I think, in the same situation, knowing then what we know now, I think they stick with Lane Johnson at this point. Offensive line was a big need of three of the top four teams in this draft. And, we got to stand pat. And Lane Johnson, based on his career compared with everyone else up here, we needed a tackle opposite of Peters. He was the best fit.
Other tackles available on the board would be DJ Fluker, Eric Fisher, Jordan Mills, Justin Pugh. You still want Lane Johnson?
Yep, I still want Lane Johnson. Despite the 10-game suspension this year, I still want Lane.
All right. Back to you, Neil. We are heading to the Detroit Lions. Ezekiel Ansa no longer available for Detroit. Their top needs are O-line, wide receiver, defensive end, linebacker, cornerback. Is there a player you're interested in here for the Detroit Lions?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll go with a cornerback here. I think there were two outstanding corners in this draft, Desmond Trufant, who went to Atlanta, and then just after him, I think it was Xavier Rhodes, who went to Minnesota. I would take Xavier Rhodes there for Detroit. He's been a good player. Still an ascending player.
Would you prefer the cornerback over the safety and maybe Eric Reed?
Oh God, yeah.
All right, fair enough. Next up on the list,
would you take Reed? Would you take Reed over Xavier Rhodes?
I don't know if I would go cornerback here for Detroit. If they're listing offensive line as one of their top needs, I might go with one of those other. I might go with Travis Frederick, honestly. I'll give Detroit the center. But we'll
center
stick with,
pick there. Yeah.
Listen, honestly, it's the tough pick. It was tough when Dallas picked Travis Frederick at pick 31 in the first round.
Traded down.
But I think obviously based on the careers that these players have had, I think Frederick would help, especially in a need position, the most. Kevin, the lowly Cleveland Browns are next. They ended up taking Barkevious Mingo. their top need has always been quarterback. But wide receiver, linebacker, and corner are the other needs listed here. According to our weighted list here, the top players available would be Kyle Long, Jamie Collins, or DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to definitely go with Jamie Collins. I mean, he found his way on the Browns eventually. Let's just get him there earlier than he should have been, than he has been. So, yeah, let's lock it up. Jamie Collins.
There you go. Jamie Collins going to start his career with Cleveland, not in New England. Arizona is next on the board here, Greg. They ended up taking guard Jonathan Cooper. So maybe instead of that guard, maybe this is where Kyle Long goes.
Absolutely no way. You got to go with the Honey Badger. He's too good for them already. Just lock it in.
All right. So the Honey Badger gets taken here by Arizona. This has been interesting. The drop of Kyle Long, ladies and gentlemen, it's a real thing. St. Louis is next, though, James. They went with Tavon Austin at wide receiver. Are they sticking with that pick, or are they going Kyle Long?
Oh, my gosh. What other needs do they have at this point? I feel like they just took the most explosive player on the board when they took Tavon Austin. No, we definitely got to go a different direction, not Tavon Austin. The defense is already stout up front. Might as well balance out the O-line. And, yes, we will do you a solid and remove Kyle Long from the board.
Ah, Kyle Long's drop didn't last for very long. The Rams' top needs were running back, wide receiver, offensive line, so they do get one of their top three needs filled. Eddie Lacy, of course, still remains on the board, but I have a feeling he's going to drop a long way. We're not going to see Eddie Lacy anytime soon. The blustery wind from across the pond has jumped in because he knows he's next, making a pick for the New York Jets, who went cornerback D. Milner. Neil, are they taking the other cornerback that you had mentioned earlier, or are they going DeAndre Hopkins here?
No, I think keep it simple. We'll give them Desmond Trufant, who was the corner they really wanted. Although D. Milner, oh my God, give me Trufant there.
All right, Greg, you had asked in the chat on the side about Hopkins. Is Hopkins going here to the Tennessee Titans, who picked Chance Warmack at guard?
They absolutely are going to go with Hopkins because they've been searching for a wide receiver ever since this draft. So why not get it done?
All right, so DeAndre Hopkins is off the board, Kevin. We're moving now to the San Diego Chargers. They went with DJ Fluker, who could still fit in this spot if they wanted to stick with the pick.
I mean, they desperately need offensive line help. They still do. I'm not really the biggest fan of DJ Fluker, but I'm looking at the draft. There's no other really good offensive linemen to replace him that haven't already been taken. I'm looking at the other first-round picks to see who would be a good fit for them. I could be mean and give them Cordarrelle Patterson, but, yeah, we might as well stick with DJ Fluker.
The other choices, as I'm looking at the Pro Football Reference site, of guys with a higher weighted average than Fluker would be... Bakhtiari is already off... Wait,
already gone.
Didn't we already give him? Yeah, we gave him.
Yeah,
someone.
Yeah, we already gave him. Yeah,
yeah. So, Bakhtiari.
I thought
it was the first pick. He has overrode the first pick.
Yeah.
Kelsey didn't go first then. Okay.
No,
Kelsey. No, Kelsey did not go first.
he would have done it if we hadn't stopped him. Greg and his pot-filled cupcakes.
In terms of offensive linemen, there is not another player weighted higher, but we do have Alec Ogletree at linebacker. And right behind Fluker, we have Giovanni Bernard at running back. Eric Fisher, who was the former number one overall pick, is also still on the board. So they could go Fisher here if they don't want Fluker. Frederick is off the board too, Greg.
I've got a list. Shall I read the list out for you?
Yes, please
I've got the Chiefs with Bakhtiari, Jacksonville with Bell, Miami take Ansah, Philadelphia take Johnson, the original pick, Detroit take Xavier Rhodes, the Browns take Jamie Collins, Arizona take Tyrann Mathieu, the Rams take Kyle Long, and the Jets take Desmond Trufant.
The Titans take Hopkins.
Titans take Hopkins, yeah.
The Chargers, and now we're on the Chargers.
Can I change my pick to Fluker to Travis Frederick then?
Certainly.
Sure.
We're doing it. We're doing it.
This is the draft. This isn't some amateur thing. Your card went in, your card sticks.
All right. So, Neil, thank you for keeping track, and please do continue to keep track so that we can include our redraft on the website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. So now the Chargers are going to take Travis Frederick, and that brings us to the Oakland Raiders, who originally went with DJ Hayden here. I have a feeling the Raiders are not going DJ Hayden. Who's next up? I think it's James, right?
Yeah. And looking, if we stay with position, I actually like either Darius Slay or the other Falcons corner that was drafted, Robert Alford, even though he went in the second round. I'm tempted to bump him up to first round status here and go ahead and make it Robert Alford, cornerback to the Oakland Raiders at this point.
All right. Robert Alford will come off the board quite early here, and he will go to the Oakland Raiders. Next up now, Neil, is the New York Jets again, and this is where the Jets ended up taking Sheldon Richardson. I have a feeling they probably are regretting that choice. Probably don't want to stick with Sheldon Richardson here.
On the field, he's a good player. He's been to the Pro Bowl, I think, at least once, if not twice, in his career. So I think would he be, along with Ansah, the next Pro Bowler off this original draft? I will give them Kawan Short, who went number 44 to Carolina in the original draft. I think Short is he might not be quite the player on the field, but he's certainly a better guy off the field, and the Jets could do with some of that. So give me Kawan Short.
All right. Carolina's on the board now. Greg, Star Lutalele was their original pick. Where are you going with Carolina?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. you know what? I mean, I like Star as a player, so I want to stay with him. I think he was supposed to be, until he had a heart condition, the best player in the draft that year. So I'm going to stay with him.
All right. Next up, Kevin, we have the New Orleans Saints. They went with Kenny Vaccaro at safety. Eric Reed is on the board. I had mentioned him earlier.
Eric Reed is on the board. I'm not really a fan of him. I'm not really a fan of Kenny Vaccaro, although if I do recall, he had a pretty decent rookie year, but it's been all downhill since. So I'm going to actually give them, hold on one second if I can remember his name. I'm going to give them the Jaguars pick of, stay with me here, boys, Jonathan Cyprien as another safety who I think has had a better career than both Vaccaro and Eric Reed.
All right. So Cyprien becomes the pick for New Orleans. The Buffalo Bills surprised everyone in this particular draft and went rogue, some could say, and took quarterback EJ Manuel. I don't know if the Bills are going to stick with this quarterback choice. Who's up next? It's you, James.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
let me give you some of the Buffalo needs at this time. Quarterback, wide receiver, offensive line, linebacker, and safety. You do have Travis Kelce, as we've established. He is available, probably could help out whatever quarterback the Bills would end up going with if they didn't take EJ Manuel. Giovanni Bernard at running back. They wouldn't have needed to trade for Shady at this point if they had Giovanni Bernard. Or, of course, Eddie Lacy also on the board.
Yeah. Now let's go a completely different direction. You did mention wide receiver, and I see a burner here still on the list. Cordero Patterson.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's almost as bad as EJ Manuel.
I'm gonna, and you know what?
It's the Bills. It's the Bills.
It's the Bills. Well, I'm going to ask Kevin if he thinks there's a better wide receiver on the board.
Honestly,
I mean,
I'm sort of setting this up because the receiver,
Terrence Williams.
Yeah.
No.
I love the man Terrence Williams, but I mean, yeah, he did. That was a bad mistake. But let's be real, Dan Bailey wasn't going to hit a 64-yard field goal to win the game anyway, and the Cowboys won the division and first overall seed, so all is forgiven. But I do love Terrence Williams, but if I'm being honest with myself, he is not a first-round pick, and he never will be a first-round pick. But he is Cordell Patterson does make him look like a Hall of Famer. I really don't know where to go with the pick for this, the Bills for this pick. I mean, this draft was absolutely terrible.
I'm seeing a lot of names being written by Greg and Neil. So go ahead, guys.
Go ahead.
Well, I think what you have in this draft are still two outstanding tight ends, and Travis Kelce and Jordan Reed. They're still on the board.
Yeah, Jordan Reed would be a good pick.
There's also AJ Boye, who was an undrafted free agent in that year.
What about Tyler Eifert?
Eifert's there too, yeah. Great tight end year.
I mean, there's four very good tight ends in this draft, so.
All right, so we're going to give him Jordan Reed just because he is Jordan the most explosive tight end receiver.
But and I don't want him on the now about team. Jordan Reed with all his injuries and his concussions. Do we still want to go with that?
I mean, Tyler Eifert is injury prone too. I think Kelsey's had a few injuries. And plus, I just want Jordan Reed out of the NFC East, and so should you, James. So he's going to the Bills.
Hey, we can handle Jordan Reed from time to time.
Neil, I know you're anxious to jump in, but having the Pittsburgh Steelers super fan here at pick number 17, I feel like we should let Greg jump ahead of you. Are you sticking with Jarvis Jones at the linebacker position?
You're kidding me. This is the man who won Kelce number one.
Give me A.J. Boye, since the Steelers are still looking to draft corners.
All right, A.J. Boye. All right, so, Neil, I'll give you the San Francisco 49ers, who took Eric Reed at this spot.
Yeah, I would say, Jay, that, yeah, I mean, if Kelce is still on the board, which I believe he is, yeah, Travis Kelce's on the board. He's the best player available as far as I can see from the list of players. And the first round, you take the best player available regardless of position. So it's Travis Kelce.
All right. So Travis Kelce will be taken by the Niners at 18. Kevin at 19, your beloved New York Giants, and I'm using beloved sarcastically. Justin Pugh was the choice. At this time, who are you going to give the Giants unbiasedly?
I mean, for some reason, I think Justin Pugh is considered to be a pretty decent offensive guard. I mean, I think he was drafted as a tackle, but he's definitely not a tackle. I think he's somewhat, after he struggled definitely his first 1 or 2 years, I think he's settled in to be a nice offensive lineman, unfortunately. I mean, the Giants also do need a tight end just because they haven't had one since really Jeremy Shockey. I mean, Martellus Bennett was there for a bit, but he wasn't like the Martellus Bennett we know today. And ever since then, they've just been throwing out random enterprise rent-a-car people. So we're going to give them, I'm either going to stick with Justin Pugh or give him Tyler Eifert. But since the Giants offense line is terrible and he's one of the only good spots on that line, we'll stick with Justin Pugh for them.
All right. Next up is the Chicago Bears. They went with Kyle Long. Kyle Long no longer available. So the Chicago Bears, their top needs, I believe we will go back to who am I with now? James.
Yeah.
Chicago Bears, their top needs, wide receiver, offensive line, linebacker, and corner.
Ooh. This is a tough one. Oh,
guys still on the board. We still have Alec Ogletree on the board, Giovanni Bernard, Jordan Mills, who Chicago did end up taking in the fifth round. Sheldon Richardson, I believe, is still on the board. Larry Warford.
Darius Slay, cornerback, still on the board.
Oh, wow. This is really ugly. sure, let's go with Darius Slay here, cornerback.
All right, Darius Slay comes off the board for Chicago. Next up, Neil, we're back to you again. Cincinnati Bengals took Tyler Eifert, and I believe we have established Eifert still remains available.
Yeah, obviously the tight end class was phenomenal that year. We've got the fabulous Gavin Escobar also on the board, Kevin. but I think it's very tight, very close, but I'll just take Eifert over Gavin Escobar.
All right. Atlanta is next, Greg. They went with Desmond Trufant. Trufant is off the board. With the run on corners so far, I don't think Atlanta can think of a corner unless you want to go with AJ Bouye here.
Well, I already took AJ Bouye.
Oh, that's right. He's already off the board.
AJ Bouye's been gone.
We'll stay in the secondary, though. We'll go with the guy who just got paid. How about the undrafted guy, Tony Jefferson?
Oh, Greg, come on. I was going to get him to the Cowboys at 31.
all right. So the Falcons steal a pick from the Dallas Cowboys. The Minnesota Vikings are next, Kevin. And they went with defensive tackle Sharif Floyd. They are probably not going in that direction here.
No, I mean, at the time, it was considered a great pick for the Vikings. I mean, he had a pretty good career at Florida, seemed to be the next big thing at defensive tackle. I'm going to stick with defensive tackle here, and I'm going to give them the Ravens' emerging stud nose tackle. What's his face? Brandon Williams. Definitely clogged that defensive lineup, and I think will be a good addition to any team, so... why not go to the Vikings?
All right. The next pick, James, is the Green Bay Packers. And they went with, Minnesota's coming back up again. We're going to the Colts at pick 24. It's Neil's favorite, Bjorn Warner. the Colts obviously not going with Bjorn Warner here at the defensive end position. The Colts really could go and a number of different ways here. Their needs, according to this article from way back when, running back, linebacker, defensive tackle, cornerback. Eddie Lacy is still available. Yeah, I did say running back. Yep.
Oh, cool. We'll go with Eddie Lacy.
Eddie Lacy going to Indianapolis.
Can I just throw another name in before we make that official?
Okay.
What about a C.J. Anderson still there?
Nice pick.
C.J. Anderson. Okay.
Just food for thought.
Giovanni Bernard also still available.
I think they definitely need to take a running back so they don't make that trade for Trent Richardson, giving up a first-round pick five months
after. Gosh, yes. I feel like Eddie Lacy.
Still going with Eddie Lacy. All right, we'll put Eddie Lacy, running back with the Indianapolis Colts. Neil, we're back to Minnesota again. They took Xavier Rhodes back then. Xavier Rhodes no longer available. So who you got from Minnesota?
Well, they had what, three first round picks all pretty close together now, didn't they? I think I'm going to, for me, it's either Benny Logan or Keenan Allen. And I know Allen's been injured quite a lot, but I think Keenan Allen's also been a really, really good player when he's been on the field, and hopefully injury problems will be behind him this coming season. Give me Keenan Allen there, wide receiver.
I think that's a good pick, Neil, and I'm going to agree with you. Keenan Allen, now with the Minnesota Vikings. The Green Bay Packers, I tried to throw to them earlier, Greg, but now it's time for the Green Bay Packers at 26. They went with Dayton Jones.
And we'll correct this pick and go with C.J. Anderson. Be a nice fit for them.
There you go. They no longer saddled with Eddie Lacy, so to speak. The Houston Texans, Kevin, took DeAndre Hopkins. He's well off the board at this point. So they have a hole to fill at wide receiver.
They do, and I was going to give them Keenan Allen. Unfortunately, Neil saved him from me. I'm seeing some other wide receivers in this draft, such as Marcus Wheaton, but he's definitely not a first-round pick.
If Kenny Stills.
Yeah, it's Kenny Stills.
Tavon Austin. Not,
yeah, definitely not Tavon.
Robert Woods.
God, this draft like really was horrible, wasn't it?
I'm really selling it, aren't I?
You really are.
Robert Woods isn't bad.
Yes, he is.
No, he's terrible.
He just had a few injuries.
I mean, he's okay. Who am I picking for the Broncos?
Here, offensive line, nose tackle, linebacker, and corner also positions a need for the Houston Texans.
Aren't we on the Broncos?
No, we're on the Texans.
Alonzo still
there. Texans.
Oh, the Texans. Yeah, my bad.
Kiko Alonzo. That would fill a linebacker need. Let's see here. I'm looking. We do have Fluker and Fisher if we want to go offensive line.
Barcelulele is still out there.
Yeah, let's give him Kiko Alonzo for the.
As also, Zach Ertz is still available.
Zach Ertz, yeah. Not a fan of him either.
Whoa, what?
Yep.
Nice. Who hurt you?
No, Kiko Alonso, great player. I'm pretty sure he won Defensive Rookie of the Year. In this alternate reality of ours, we'll pretend that he's not injury prone. So the Texans will get themselves a quality linebacker.
All right, Kiko Alonso will end up now with the Houston Texans. Now the Denver Broncos are up for right. James. They went with Sylvester Williams, the defensive tackle.
We're going to with that position, different player, my man, who's no longer with us in Philly, Benny Logan.
All right. Benny Logan going to the Denver Broncos. All right, Neil, you had mentioned it earlier, the Minnesota Vikings back on the clock. This is where Cordarrelle Patterson went originally. They don't need to go Cordarrelle Patterson again. We gave Keenan Allen to the Vikings, right? Yes. So,
yeah, they took Keenan Allen.
Patterson's
an
excellent playmaker.
Yeah.
Special teams.
I think I might drop Eric Fisher into the Minnesota Vikings at this point. Am I right in saying he's moved into guard now for the Chiefs? Is that correct?
It's a good question I cannot confirm nor deny.
I thought he got a big extension to be a left tackle.
He certainly got a big extension, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, look, I'll take Eric Fisher. That's down probably in a better range for him down there in the late 20s. So yeah, give me Eric Fisher. Redemption for Eric Fisher.
All right, pick number 30 is the St. Louis Rams. They took Alec Ogletree here, Greg. Ogletree is still on the board.
I gotta say, since it is Jeff Fisher's team, I am tempted by Kyle Juszczyk here, but I think I'll stick with their original pick in this 30. That Ogletree is a pretty good player at linebacker.
He is. In terms of the career rated average, he is in the top 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He's 7 to be even more specific. All right, pick 31 is the Dallas Cowboys, Kevin. Travis Frederick was your pick. He's no longer available. So who are you giving to your team?
I am going to give to them. Let's see. Does anyone know if Ryan Schrader, the Falcons' right tackle is. I think he's pretty decent, or am I crazy? Is he had a somewhat good career so far? Anyone?
He's a good player, and yes, you are still crazy.
Okay. So you know what? We're going to give the Cowboys the secondary help they've needed for 10 years now. We're going to give them Logan Ryan.
Ooh, Logan Ryan going to the Dallas Cowboys. Interesting choice for the Cowboys. The Ravens are last in the first round. They went with safety Matt Elam. James, who do you give the Baltimore Ravens?
What are the positions of need at the time for them?
Baltimore is looking at offensive line, wide receiver, linebacker, corner, and safety.
Yeah, let's go ahead and stick with Matt Elam here. Let him have the same pick. Based on everyone else who's been picked thus far, is probably the best thing available from what I can see of everyone who's left.
All right, so there's the first round of 2013, ladies and gentlemen. It is over. Who did Houston pick? I don't recall. Come on, Neil, you were supposed to be the secretary here.
They took Kiko Alonso.
Oh, there you go. Who's the best player still available for the folks to pick on the second day? Jacksonville will have the number one pick on Friday. Who is Jacksonville going to be weighing over? Is it Sheldon Richardson?
Geno Smith.
Probably Sheldon Richardson. Could be Geno Smith. You know, EJ Manuel. Manti Te'o still out there. You know, he's some very good players, guys.
DJ Swearinger.
you still have the only two-time All-Pro from this class, Cordell Patterson. So,
right. Luke Jokel, who is the number two overall pick, still available.
Oh, boy. We should have known Gus Bradley's tenure was in trouble, considering this was his first pick as a coach. We should have known.
Tavon Austin still available. He was the number eight pick overall.
JC Tretter. Just got
This has been a fun little experiment. So let us know what you think. NextFanUp@gmail.com. And you can always tweet us at NFU Podcast. Check out what we got going on our Facebook page. Neil.
I do have a question about this first round for you guys. As part of my preparation, I was thinking, you look at the top half of this first round and it's hideous, and the second half is much better. How much of that do you think is down to the fact that the top teams, the top picks, you know, the first 15 picks are the rubbish teams, and the second half of the draft are the better teams, and those players get a chance to develop and take a little bit more time to play? Do you think there's an aspect of that in this draft? That those first guys were just thrown in the deep end on rubbish teams and couldn't pick up the slack?
I mean, there could be something to that. But, I mean, let's think of how many of these first round picks didn't get picked again. Jokel, Jordan, Mingo, Cooper, Austin, Milner, Warmack. Did Fluker end up getting picked?
Yeah.
I don't remember. He did?
No, I substituted Fluker for Frederick because I didn't realize Frederick had not gone.
Okay, so Fluker's still available. Hayden's
still available.
Lutalele is still available, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's Kenny Vaccaro, EJ Manuel,
Jarvis Jones. I mean, they were just lousy picks.
Well, were they lousy players, or were they players who couldn't cope with the pressure of being on lousy teams?
Well, I think there's another aspect too, is that I think those very top picks, you're projecting a lot. You're looking for those attributes. Like, let's pick on Cleveland's pick, Mingo. I mean, he was undersized, but he had the great length, the great speed. He was never able to pack on the weight or the strength. And so I think they're doing a lot more projection at the top end, trying to hit that home run.
That's the way to save your job. At least that's the argument that you definitely want to make to save your job for sure. No, but I mean, honestly, I mean, some of those players that we named are bad players. It doesn't matter if they move to a different team or not. They're not going to end up being players that will ever talk about and put in a top round of another mock draft.
I mean, a great deal of this first round we didn't even draft. You know, bordering if not 50%, 2/3 of it. You know, we still didn't draft a lot of these guys. Not saying there's not any star power here. We did, you know, pretty much draft all of the, you know, most of the big names. And, you know, there's more talent practically in the second and third round that we end up bumping up based on, you know, and again, this is knowing then what we know now. So hindsight being 2020, you know, at the time, these guys coming out of school were, you know, top tier at their positions. You know, and like you said, yeah, the front office personnel, they get paid on projections and how they expect people to turn out. But I mean, the draft is pretty much, to say it's hit or miss is an understatement. I mean, you're basically shooting craps, you know, with every single pick that comes out. And some positions are easier to gauge than others. You never really expect to miss on this many offensive linemen, you know, coming out. Three tackles in the first four picks. And be perfectly honest, I mean, Lane Johnson of those three probably has the best career thus far.
That's a very good point. By the way, New England originally had the 29th pick, and Minnesota traded up into the first round again to get Cordarrelle Patterson.
He's a playmaker.
I don't know if the draft had run the way that it did. This time around, if the Patriots would have traded out of the first round, probably not.
And Sheldon, the Patriots' first pick this year,
in this particular year, in 2013, it was Jamie Collins in the second round.
Second round, too. With the pick they got from Minnesota,
number 52.
You know, probably the best player in this whole draft who doesn't get to play football, I mean, at least they get credited for being in this draft, is Josh Gordon, since the Browns wisely apparently used their second round pick to take him in that supplemental draft.
Right.
But
right.
That's the one time it was probably worthwhile to get a pothead that can't stay on the field with a second round pick.
I would imagine the Patriots would have taken Sheldon Richardson. In this particular scenario, they probably would not have traded out of the first round and given Minnesota another pick. And I also don't think Minnesota, based on the way that the draft went, would have traded back into it.
Who are the worst players in this first round? Who really are the three worst players? Deion Jordan?
Yeah, I have to go DJ Hayden at the top.
I think Mingo definitely owns the title of one of those top three spots.
D. Milliner is pretty bad.
Yeah,
he could have been.
I would say D. Milliner, just because he barely ever played. At least these other people played a little bit. So him and Deion Jordan, I would say, are the worst, because by injury or suspension, they just didn't find themselves on the field very often.
EJ Manuel.
Oh, yeah, him too.
So what we've learned, Jay, is anybody who's called DJ, DJ, or EJ shouldn't be picked.
There you go.
One last thing about was Hernandez's last year 2013 for the Patriots or 2012? Because him and Richardson could have been a great tag team off the field.
Wow, that's that is really really. Yeah. Unfortunately, it is. And on that note, I will.
Well, look, Kevin surely has got to get some shot in about Aleppo. Come on, Kevin. we've missed it.
Well, I was going to say, I'll even do something nice and promote Kevin's goodbye to Tony Romo one more time. Nextfanup.wordpress.com. And of course, we want to hear all of your comments.
You do need to put a note at the bottom, or probably at the top of that article, just saying that you've got to have tissues at the ready.
It does pull at the heartstrings, and it and
I
mean, it. Does
I was like, crying.
I know. Well,
second
I
paragraph.
Know
for, I was already going.
I know. For me, it brought me back to the Drew Bledsoe days. It's that heartwarming. All right, that's it. No more interruptions. Let me get to Jeff Fisher. Oh. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that this game is four quarters long.